Let's look at the ratio. I'm going to try to pick up where we left off and not repeat too much. But let's look at the ratio of darkness to light. We were just talking a little bit about the book I read about Muhammad by Karen Armstrong. Let's look at the ratio of darkness to light. Like the Arabian tribes and Muhammad's understanding of supplication. Supplication. For people, if they get on their hands and knees and pause and breathe and make a prayer, you know, they could be stampeded by any host of enemies, or organic or of the animal kingdom or of the human kingdom, right? The ratio of that light in inside of its darkness is huge. But what we've been talking about is that it is a theory, something that I'm promulgating right now, which is, okay, so if we want to revere Muhammad, it's not what he said. His level of awakening, I don't think was more necessarily than someplace we could experience ourselves. And we, I just say anybody who thinks they can, because I'm not the judge of that either. But the ratio was great. When we have these moments of insight and Santa Fe, oh, I need to surrender more. Big deal. What's the ratio for you? You're living in freedom. You're living with food every time you get hungry. You're living with people who love you in a way that you can feel in your soul and skin and bones. You're living, as much as we complain about America, we're having this conversation right now, and I could say click, clack, scat-a-doodle about any politician and I'd be fine. Right? I could even burn a symbol of something. Probably I'd be fine. It had village state. So the ratio is what's so special. And when we're looking at the Hebrew tradition, which is what we're largely looking at right now, Abraham. Right? So in the midst of a culture and a lifestyle and a consciousness where material meant so much, you're wandering in the desert, you know, praying for a morsel of rain. Will my crop grow? Will my material, the root chakra, so active, material meaning so much. We're relating to the gods largely out of fear and survival mode. And totally, understandably, I would too. And I have, on my own little wilderness expeditions, at times been tried so much, and my basic sense of survival, it was pretty hard to have a high consciousness. And those were just for a few days, with my training being, I don't live in survival mode, okay? So this mug here, if when Abraham says, he smashes the idols, which was not because they symbolized power. It was because he smashed them because people were misunderstanding that they had power. That you could pray, grab this mug and look it straight in the eye and say, Sun God, do this. Wind God, do that. He smashed them because he said there is no way that power resides inside this. Now let's remember that. He smashed the idols. I don't even like the term idols. The symbols. Because he believed or sensed, I don't know if he was right or wrong, I wasn't there. He believed that people were ascribing power to the man-made object. And he knew something invisible had power. Or something only perceptible to a different kind of vision would have power. Something had to be greater than the sum of the parts. Every fabricated, materialized existence. Something had to be greater than that. That is an amazing degree, ratio, between what was happening around him and what came through him. And if we're going to revere anything about him, I was just saying, well, whatever these stories say, okay, whatever. If we're going to revere anything about him and the named and nameless ones that he called his family, because we have no idea if this understanding happened isolated through him Maybe there were. Maybe Sarah was right there with him. Maybe not. Maybe he had another girlfriend at the time. Maybe it was really her and he's just the one who got... I don't really care. So even when I say Abraham, I know this is a symbol that got symbolized for a shift of consciousness. And I don't need to, because I know that the name Abraham symbolizes the shift of consciousness, I don't need to every time say Sarah or Adin or... Maybe there was a little posse with him, maybe not, maybe a girlfriend, maybe not. But the him is not just the him, okay? Abraham, the Ivri, the one that crosses the boundary, the Hebrew. Having this shift of consciousness, having the power, strength, courage, devotion, commitment to smash what was not enough light, was not making space for enough light. That's what's so honorable and so impressive and such a beautiful tradition to carry. So if we're going to carry any tradition, memorize the stories of Abraham or not, read the Midrash or not, if we're going to carry any tradition, it's the tradition of the uprising of consciousness in a very extreme proportion to what it's rising from. So, we sit here now in the courage to say this, to feel for, I give it no absolute credit, relative credit, to feel a sense of being illuminated and inspired right now, and to have the courage to say, I don't really care about all these separate stories that we just looked at, the different scholarship and historians may have been written by these authors, and was it even one author, and then the redactor edited it, and the legends of a people are legends of a people and peoples. Great. People. We know what people are. They are those funny, hysterical creatures that make mountains out of molehills and can't remember to do that and promise somebody that and didn't do it, and we mess up and we're fallible and we're beautiful and we're a conglomeration of everything. The legends of a people are made of people. Now, where they're made of illuminated people, lovely. Where they're made of sad and angry and despondent people, also fine. Thank you very much. I have compassion for your suffering, and I offer a stone on your grave. You are buried, and so is your person. The tradition of Abraham is not about Abraham. If we narrow the tradition of Abraham to the person that he was, or that he represents, or the people that he represents, we are reducing the very teaching that he really offers us. That I do believe Muhammad offers, and I haven't barely read the Quran, and I'm not talking about the Quran. I'm talking about reading the history as best as we can surmise it. I believe Karen Armstrong did the best job it could be done. As best as we can surmise it. The history of a person inside of a humanity aching in its darkness, standing up and saying, here's light, here's love, here's truth. That's a tradition to walk in. And when we come, so all this is having me think just right now, do I even stand as tall as Abraham or whoever he represents, as Muhammad or whoever his name represents? Because what's the ratio that I stand up in? We're going to do a new moon ritual here on Friday night, along with Kabbalat Shabbat, and we're going to, through that, the darkness, right, the new moon ritual is how to enwomb ourselves in the darkness and become more familiar with the darkness, and where is it time to bring some light? And we're going to do that. What's the ratio that we're going to have in this room between the darkness and the light we're going to bring? I can't imagine it's as great as the two that we've talked about. We've only talked about, I'm not singling them out because they're better than other names that we know and many other names we don't know. But the tradition of humanity, where one can be called by such a knowing of something illumined, true of the heart, expansive, inclusive, harmless, to make it the most on the ground, really harmless to itself and society. The tradition of that one who can stand up in a pile of rubble and ash, harm and war and beheadings and burnings, and the one who can stand up there, that's a tradition. That's a tradition, I won't even say worthy of preservation, worthy of emulation, worthy of our immediate attention and participation.